can never call the kids by their first name.
I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order. Colleagues, we're going to start out with a public hearing on Senate Bill 1028. So I'm going to open that public hearing on Senate Bill 1028.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a measure brought to you by Senator Manning, and it authorizes professional licensing boards to consider and substitute relevant experience for a high school diploma or the equivalent education requirement. No amendment, no revenue impact, no expenditure impact, and the vote in the Senate was 29-0.
Senator Manning and David Bean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is James Irie Manning, Jr. I'm a senator from Senate District 7, which is Eugene and Junction City. And I'm here today in support of SB 1028. SB 28 is a very, very important bill. We did a lot of work on this bill to make sure that all of the pertinent I's and T's were dotted and I and crossed. And this bill specifically is designed for people that have not completed a GED or high school diploma. More importantly, what it also does is that people that are in our that may have some type of intellectual or developmental disability can also be considered for a license where it's required. What this bill does not do is that it does not allow anyone to apply for a license that are not qualified for a specific professional license. But the bill itself said that they may be considered instead of saying they shall be considered. In the Senate, this bill had to go to to Rules Committee, because there were some questions concerning this bill that some of my Senate colleagues have raised. In particular, centered around whether or not unintended consequences that this bill may carry. So I referred back to LC to make sure that there was no questions as to the intent of this bill. And some of the things that was specifically that a person who is not qualified for a state license would be allowed to acquire one without oversight in the event that they qualify for a specific skill set. I go back to my younger brother, who is high-functioning autism. He has a job that he's been doing for the last 20-something years. It is a repetitive motion job, and it's one that he does, and it, in this particular case, it does not require one. But I have come across in my time with as a Pearl Buck Center board of director, who has a they have a facility that deals with adults with developmental difficulties or developmental issues, autism, some Down syndrome, that have acquired skill sets that allow them to produce certain types of material, die-cast machine operators, for example, where they have to dial in particular specs. So the only thing that this thing does is that it allows our people, our family members, our friends that may not have gotten or earned a high school education or GED, the same opportunity to enter the workforce, and it does not demand that any license bureau or any license agency give them a shot at it and say that they may consider, which is really important, and I think it is the crux of this bill. So I urge your support on this Senate Bill 1028. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't you go ahead and give your rest of your testimony, please.
I'm a spokesman for all the disability people in the state of Oregon. I'm the advisor to the governor, Jody Hacks, wants to attend with my bill, and Senator Manning likes my bill. My name's David Beam. I'm an advocate for special needs population in the state, and I'm very well known in the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
And I like this bill. I like to see this done because Barbara Roberts' son is a disability person. He does go to school in Portland. So I like to see this done. I've been working with every governor we ever had on this, and I think this is about time we get it done for Oregon this year.
Great job.
Representative Hack, would you like to say a few words?
Yeah. It's a great bill, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here to support David Beam. And
what's your name?
And for the record, your name?
State Representative Jody Hack. Thank you, Chair. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Do we have questions? Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a statement. I just wanted to say thank you to the Senator and David and Jody. It's a great bill. It kind of reminds me of a bill that I was that I authored earlier in the session. We didn't get it through, but the issue we were trying to tackle is that with switching out hot water heaters, if you didn't have a completed high school education, you're not even allowed to sit for the test. And so this is right down that alley. So I applaud you guys for this effort. Very much needed.
Other questions or comments? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one of my questions when I first read the bill was, would it maybe inhibit people in high school from following through and getting and graduating or getting their GED if it didn't matter later on if they wanted to qualify for license, or, you know, even if a lot of people start a job or they get a license to do something and the job doesn't work out because of poor planning or for whatever reason. So that was my only question, is would it inhibit that?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, great question. What this bill does, along the line, is that apprenticeship programs are offered, and a lot of times people that not necessarily complete their high school or get a GED are enrolled in apprenticeship programs, and this will allow them to be considered for a license in lieu of the educational requirements. I don't think that it would prohibit or prevent anyone from pursuing their high school education. Currently, I think that our job collectively is to make sure that we do full funding of education. And I would argue or advocate that we do full funding of pre-K through college and put the shop classes back in, that these types of classes that's going to build on apprenticeship programs to make them more enticing and to get kids more involved with this. So I do appreciate your question. I hope that I answered it adequately.
Thank you. Quick question, please.
Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, that actually sparked something in my – so my thoughts are, and I'd like to get a response from you. My question is, do you feel like that most individuals, though, that are dropping out from high school, they're probably not tied into what we're doing here enough to really know whether there's a requirement or not a requirement later in life for a particular profession they may take up? So simply by doing this, we're allowing people to – get started again once they did make a bad decision, or maybe they didn't make a bad decision at all. Maybe some people actually just didn't have the opportunity to finish high school for family reasons, economic reasons, or whatnot. But do you feel like that's a possibility? That
Chair, Vice Chair, and Representative Hurd, I think that you actually touched on something. If you look at even though our economy today is booming, we got the lowest unemployment rate, but yet we still see wages are stagnant. You know, people are not getting any kind of wage. And oftentimes, on occasion, students do drop out of school in order to supplement the family income. That's out of necessity. And they may not be returning to school at that time. Perhaps later on in life, they will go back to school. But And a lot of times, and I know from my own experience, I was able to go into a apprenticeship program growing up where I was able to acquire skills. I didn't complete them, but it gave me an opportunity, and it was not one of those things where we have now say that they may consider it. But at the time, I was still going to school. For our friends, family members that are, for whatever reason, have to leave high school or not complete their education at this time, or they may have some developmental challenges, this is a great opportunity. They're entering apprenticeship programs. They're doing the work. But because of certain education requirements at those levels, now, we're not talking about people going in to get a surgeon license or an optometrist license or anything like that. You know, we're talking about some of these basic skill apprenticeship programs that they may be considered in lieu of education.
Senator, do you mind if I comment?
Yes.
Chair Holvey and Representative Hurd, I think what's important to remember is the opportunity for those with developmental disabilities. I have a nephew who is autistic, And if he were to not finish high school and this were to open an opportunity for him or for folks that David Beam had mentioned, that if there's, and what the senator had talked about, if there's an opportunity for them to succeed in the workplace and have an opportunity to gain a license in order for them to either stay employed or possibly move up in their employment, this would open a door that they could possibly consider that, where now they're not able to even consider giving them those. So I think the importance of focusing on the those with developmental disabilities is key in this piece of legislation.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I may kind of add on to that. I do have a constituent back in Eugene, and he has a son with developmental issues. And his son is at a place now where he can no longer work under this certain programs that are for people with developmental difficulty or challenges. I don't think that that's a fair thing. I don't think that we should treat our families in this manner, because by not allowing them to live out the full extent of their life, whatever that may be, then we are not doing a great service to them, nor are we doing it to ourselves. So I think this bill is a good, a great bill. As David has said, that he's been trying to get this bill through for some time. I think the time for us to stand up and do something is right now. So I'm hoping that you would support SB 1028.
Other questions, comments? Thank you very much
for
being here today. I appreciate you bringing this bill forward.
Thank you.
So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1028 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 983.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a measure that was introduced by the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. It eliminates the limited maintenance electrician's license category, and it specifies that electrical and plumbing installations in recreational vehicles do not need to be performed by licensed electricians or plumbers. No amendment, no revenue impact, no expenditure impact. Senate vote was 29-0.
Thank you. I have Vince Porter, Daryl Fuller, and Genoa Ingram. Good afternoon. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Afternoon. Chair Hovey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Vince Porter, and I'm here representing the Recreational Vehicle Industry Association. The RVIA is a national trade association representing recreational vehicle manufacturers and their component parts suppliers, who together build more than 98% of the RVs produced in the United States. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 983, which will allow our local manufacturers of RVs to remain competitive and retain the business they've worked hard to grow over the past few years. Senate Bill 983 would codify a long-standing practice and put Oregon in alignment with every other state in the country. If Senate Bill 983 was not to pass, the Building Codes Division would be required to enforce something that would have no impact on consumers and only motivate manufacturers that would consider out-of-state operations. And I say this because the licensing requirement actually would only apply to recreational vehicles built in Oregon and sold in Oregon. It would not apply to recreational vehicles built in any other state, or would not apply to vehicles built here and sold out of state. With so many companies operating in multiple states, the decision on where to locate and expand would be greatly impacted by this requirement. The impact of this bill not passing would be felt primarily in rural Oregon, as RV manufacturers in the state tend to reside in our smaller population areas. Areas like Albany, Harrisburg, Dallas, Cresswell, Newburgh, Woodburn, and Pendleton. We appreciate the Building Codes Division to attempt to correct this problem and are in full support of Senate Bill 983. As was said, the Senate committee passed with 29, in the Senate it passed on the floor with 29 aye votes. I just lastly would say there was an alternative bill that we supported, but after a robust debate and several conversations, we aligned with the consensus and went ahead with Senate Bill 9083. And we urge you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. As you know, there's an ongoing discussion in the building on what a tiny home is versus a park model versus a recreational vehicle versus a manufactured home versus whatever else we're calling it today. And we certainly acknowledge as licensed plumbers that there are certain, certainly recreational vehicles that don't necessarily need to have a licensed journeyman plumber in the manufacturing stage. The part of the bill that we strongly support is that it makes clear that there are exemptions from using a journeyman plumber, but that it has the plumbing board has the final authority in deciding what actually works and doesn't work in terms of a recreational vehicle. So it has the industry participating in the process of determining sort of where those long lines get drawn. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Genoa Ingram, Oregon Manufactured Housing Association, here in support of the bill. Although it does not impact Oregon Manufactured Housing Association, our HUD plants do not produce these products. However, we believe that it does set a precedent by keeping Oregon on an even par with the rest of the states and not put Oregon at a disadvantage, which we believe is good for business.
Thank you. Questions from the panel on this bill?
Sure, I'll ask a question. Daryl.
Oh, great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Daryl. So you said it's different from tiny homes, but if tiny homes were manufactured in the same capacity that RVs are in a manufacturing plant, and they went through the same models day after day after day, putting in the same type of electrical, the same type of plumbing, would then you take issue with that, you know, as far as the tiny home industry?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Barato, it possible under the circumstances, because one of the sort of the distinguishing factors, if you will, between a recreational vehicle and others is how long they're occupied and the amount of use they have. So if something is being repetitively built but it's intended for permanent occupation, then we probably would have a concern that it's not being done by a journeyman plumber.
I have a follow-up.
Follow-up.
So typically, if the plumbing doesn't work, you know pretty quickly that it isn't functioning, and whether it's temporary or whether it's permanent. And so would that make a difference in this application? And I'm good with the bill. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to give you a little bit of a hard time here.
And Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Barato, in doing so successfully. The issue that came before us in this bill and in the discussions we had is that we didn't want to put Oregon at an economic disadvantage in terms of having these manufacturing sites, as Mr. Porter, my colleague, indicated clearly, because of the narrow way that it was built. What we would have done if we had pushed too far in one direction on this bill is it would have simply had RV manufacturers abandon the state of Oregon and work someplace else. So that doesn't benefit journeyman plumbers. But in terms of the ongoing discussion that we have in what a tiny home is and park model and some of these other things, we will continue to advocate on behalf of using licensed plumbers for installation purposes simply because you want to make sure the stuff does work.
So thank you.
And though I'm not sure it was really spelled out, this does affect the licensing of electricians or as well as the plumbers, or as far as making them not necessary for the construction of recreational vehicles.
Charlie, that's correct. Yeah, just for the recreational vehicles only, yes.
All right. Don't see any other questions. I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. Buddy, I know Department of Consumer and Business Services is in the room. Somebody from the Building Codes Division. I don't know if there was any questions of them. So why don't you come on up?
Alana Cox from the Building Codes Division.
Thank you.
Happy to do my best on any questions you have.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming forward. I'm just fundamentally, I guess, I just wanted to ask the question about this requirement. I'm assuming the Building Codes Division thinks the process that the recreational vehicle industry uses in this manufacturing process, that the electrical engineering and the plumbing engineering and the manufacturing process are sufficient without licensed electricians and plumbers.
Yeah, Chair Holvey, we do. We worked on the Senate side on this bill to create this bill, and we feel that especially if the boards are given the license to kind of define the scope, since they're the ones who run licensing, that this would be an appropriate approach.
So in terms of the product and the public safety associated with those products, the building codes doesn't have concerns with that?
Chair Holvey, no.
All right. Follow-up, Representative Barreto.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, seldom do we see regulations eased, so I thank you for this.
Representative Kinnamer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, in manufactured housing parks, according to the summary, then any electrical repairs or plumbing repairs could be made by a non-licensed person?
Chair Holvey, Representative Kenemer, it will depend on how the boards define the scope for the purpose of this bill, this licensing exemption, but I believe it will be based on the type of structure that it is, not where it's placed. That's my understanding.
I see. But there will be a process. Excuse me, second question.
We'll follow up.
So there will be a process for them to make that determination.
Chair Holvey, Representative Kenemer, yes. It would be through rulemaking driven by the boards, so there would be an opportunity for public involvement at the board and also at a public hearing for the rule.
Okay, thank you.
So to be clear, this bill also provides exemptions to those plumbing and electrical license for manufactured housing? Not just in addition to the recreational vehicles?
It is just recreational vehicles, Chair Holvey, but as you know, that definition can be hard to pin down, so we wanted to make sure the boards have a good definition for their purposes for the scope of this licensing exemption.
But the intent of this legislation is that these exemptions apply specifically to recreational vehicle industry.
Chair Holvey,
and
yes.
Not manufactured housing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, just following up on your question, where is that identified in the bill that it's limited to recreational vehicles? Because I see manufactured referenced.
Chair Holvey, Representative Kenemer, I think the rubber meets the road on page 10 of the bill, line 31 and 32, for the electrical purposes, and then page 11, line 42 and 43 for plumbing purposes. Refers specifically to recreational vehicles and then allows the electrical board for electrical purposes and the plumbing board for plumbing purposes to define RV.
Thank you. Thank you. And I guess maybe some of the confusion is in Section 6 of the bill on page 4, where it eliminates limited maintenance manufactured dwelling or recreational vehicle electrician.
Line 42.
Line 42.
Chair Holvey, yes, thank you. That licensing category doesn't have any current people who hold that license, so we thought this was a good opportunity to go ahead and eliminate that license category at the same time that we create this exemption for RVs.
Okay. I think we've thoroughly gone through it. Thank you very much. Okay. Well, in case there was any other questions, not seeing any, thank you. with that, was there anybody else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 983? Not seeing any, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 983. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 983. Representative Barreto, a motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 983 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves Senate Bill 983 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Kayla, could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Doherty?
Yes.
Representative Evans?
Excused.
Representative Davey?
Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Kenimer?
Aye.
Aye. Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 983, having received the votes, has passed. Carrier on this bill? Representative Barreto? Thank you. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 983. And let's open a work session on Senate Bill 722A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is a measure you heard May 8th, and it comes to you from the Judiciary Committee. It allows a fee of no more than $100 for debt management service providers who are in the business of helping consumers with repair their credit. The amendment was drafted after the public hearing, and it allows the fee to be $50 per month. And it provides that the initial $50 fee charged will count as the first month's fee. There is a minimal expenditure impact, no revenue impact, and in the Senate, the vote was 29-0.
Thank you. And colleagues, I know that in the public hearing, we were talking about this $100 fee, and there was some confusion as to whether that was a monthly fee or the initial fee. Just a one-time fee.
Right.
And so after some discussion with the stakeholders and Department of Consumer Business Service and looking at what other states charge in these fees, we came up with this $50 per month fee. Thought it was reasonable. There's no real magic to it, but that's what we're looking at in the amendment. And so I'd like to get DCBS, the person of choice, and Jim Gardner. I didn't look to see if anybody was signed. Oh, this is a work session, yeah. So, gentlemen, you probably had time to look at the amendment. I haven't had a chance to check back in just to see what people are thinking, whether this is acceptable or not. So maybe you can speak to the amendment and whether or not it's adequate.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, appearing for Lexington Law Firm, which is the major provider in the United States of debt repair services. And we would have preferred the number to be higher, but we're gonna do our very best to make this number work.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, I'm Rick Blackwell. I'm the policy manager at the Division of Financial Regulation. So we regulate the debt management service provider, or we administer the registration. Obviously, we're not in support or opposition to the bill, as it's not, I mean, that's my standard. But we're comfortable with this in that it gives it provides a capped fee consistent with the rest of the statute that's already in existence and gives those credit repair folks some assurance of cost recovery. So,
thank you. Does anybody have any questions about this particular bill? Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. How long will it take for the $50 to not be adequate compensation?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Bynum, we don't know the answer to that. We're going to, as I said, we're going to do it everything we can to make it work under this fee structure. We may want to report back to you in the next legislative session just for an informational and to also obviously work with Rick and DCBS, but after we've had a little bit of experience with it.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much, gentlemen. And we're going to stand at ease for just a moment.
That's not what you said.
I don't know.
You said you're not.
Let's reconvene. And we're still under work session on Senate Bill 722A. So, Representative Barreto.
Chair Hovey, I move to adopt the A4 amendment to Senate Bill 722.
Representative Barreto moves to adopt the A4 amendment to Senate Bill 722. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment's adopted.
Chair Hovey, I move Senate Bill 722 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves Senate Bill 722A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Kayla, could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye. Excused.
Representative
Fahey?
Aye. Representative
Hack? Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative
Kenemer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 722A, having received votes, it's passed. And volunteer to carry this bill. Representative Kenemer, thank you. Everybody, nobody looked up.
Jan will send me some notes.
Mm-hmm. I will.
With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 722 and open a work session on Senate Bill 985A.
Mr. Chair, this is a measure that the committee heard on May 15th. It exempts insurers that transact specified classes of commercial insurance from the requirements to file their rates and policy forms with the department of Consumer and Business Services. Specifies circumstances in which the exception does not apply. It allows surplus line brokers to purchase insurance from any eligible non-admitted insurer, and it authorizes the department to publish sample disclosure notice that insurers may issue to policyholders. After the committee hearing, there was a dash A3 amendment drafted that narrows the commercial lines of insurance that are exempt. And it specifies that the director of the department may adopt rules to exempt or amend the rate and filing form requirements for these commercial lines if a requirement is not desirable or necessary to protect the public and so cool. If the exemption or the amendment would enhance competition. There's no revenue impact on the amendment, no expenditure impact. The bill came over on a vote of 28-0.
Thank you. And if I could get DCBS to come back up on this one as well, and perhaps Paul Cosgrove. I apologize for not giving you a warning, but I never do.
What, apologize or give warning?
Excellent.
Sorry.
That was
locked into that one. And this may be sort of a recap. I, for one, and I think I heard from a couple other members, were just a little concerned about how this may impact small business and commercial lines. And can you go back over that for us to make us rest a little easier, hopefully?
Sure. Chair Holvey and members of the committee, for the record, again, I'm Rick Blackwell, Policy Manager at the Division of Financial Regulation. So the idea behind the amendment, and I've brought Alex Chang from our office to speak about more of the details, but the basic idea was that we would, by rule, have the ability to take a look at various lines of insurance, gather folks together that may have a diverse set of interests around a particular line, whether it should be exempt or not, really study the issue, make sure that we've done our diligence, and at that point, then we could decide whether to exempt in whole or apart the filing. And that's really the idea behind the amendment.
So you could exempt a line of insurance on an individual basis? Is that what you're saying?
Chair Holvey, that's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove, on behalf of the American Insurance Association, we agree that that's the process. And in making that exemption, the bill allows the division to also put conditions on the exemption, that it's this line of insurance, but only in these circumstances, or that have annual premiums of over this amount, meaning it's a big policy rather than a little one. As those same kinds of conditions are already worked into the bill on some of the issues, they could be worked into the bill on other things that the division exempted by rule.
Yeah, and I guess for, you know, the, you know, why I wanted to have this conversation is because it's not really written in the bill about, you know, potential impacts to small business. I just want to make sure that, you know, in implementing and writing rules on this bill, that, you know, a small business's ability, you know, to have these sorts of adjustments to commercial lines of business doesn't negatively impact small business across the board.
Chair Holvey, that's the idea behind the rulemaking, is to make sure that we've got representatives from small business and other affected parties to be able to advise us on the downstream effects on them and also consumers. An issue that came up initially as we were discussing with the proponents was cybersecurity, which is one that I think at some point is morally more than just a insurance vehicle for large businesses, but everyone's going to have to be worried about cybersecurity at some point. And so that would be the kinds of things where we'd want to really take a more measured and maybe longer-term look at those types of insurance and make sure that the impacts, again, are not that we're minimizing the impacts on those and the groups that might be affected by it.
Thank you.
And I would just add, Mr. Chair, that cybersecurity was part of the original bill, and we agreed to take it out for exactly that reason. So that was the negotiation process we went through. Thank you.
All right. Any questions? Not seeing any. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming forward.
Thank you.
We're still under a work session, so I'd take a motion on
A3
amendment.
Chair Holvey, I move to adopt the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 985.
Representative Barreto moves to adopt the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 985. Discussion. Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment's adopted.
Chair Holvey, I move Senate Bill 985 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves Senate Bill 985A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Kayla, could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Excused.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Haas?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Penimer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holvey.
Aye. Senate Bill 985 having received their votes has passed. Carrier for Senate Bill 985.
I will.
Thank you, Representative Doherty. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 985. And I am going to carry over Senate Bill 1028 to Wednesday for the record. Mm-hmm. And being at we're at that time, I think that's all on the agenda. But, Jan, do you see anything left on the agenda?
That's it. Anything else passed out?
All right. With that, I'm going to adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor.
No.
Always. Always.